coffee and stay tuned for the next 2.5 hours between Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and the hoarse but still strident voice of your very own Uncle Robert North here on Bathurst Pier Broadside. So right for the tour, they can tour Serbians, Albanians, Yugoslavians, or Santa Cruzans. Have a cup of cappuccino while the bombs fall in Yugoslavia. Is that a good idea? Well, stay tuned. 1,000 people in San Francisco didn't think so. We're going to hear from them in the program that follows. So I'm hoping to have a call-in from Patriot Right advocate James Kaiser and talk about the new assault on the civil rights of psychiatric survivors. Still tuned to Free Radio 96.3 FM, and if you have a telephone, we hope that we can tune to you by getting you to call in and join this discussion. The phone number at Free Radio Santa Cruz is 427-3772, and we welcome your calls. If you get a busy signal, try again. We only have one line, and we hope it gets used a lot. So 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz, the community radio station that actually lets you say on the air what you're thinking without censorship, without any kind of corporate requirements, as unfortunately becoming increasingly the case with other media. First, a few brief stories before my voice gives out. I'm still surviving a massive cold here, so bear with me. Here's a story from the Toronto Star feature. In Toronto, Canada, April 18th, 400 marched to Queen's Park for homeless. Out of the cold, volunteers challenged governments. It was the middle class who marched 400 strong on behalf of the city's homeless from Nathan Phillips Square to Queen's Park yesterday morning. This was a few mornings ago. For some of them, actually, that was this morning. For some of them, it was the first time they'd ever publicly held up a placard. "I've never been to a march like this," said Lenore Strathy, leader of a 24-member delegation from Humbercrest United Church in the West End. "It's quite a move for us to come on a march and make a sign." Her sign said simply, "A caring community has social housing." Although Strathy's church has been offering an out-of-the-cold lunch program for only a few weeks, she said its members already realize they must make some noise so the provincial government understands there's a real middle-class momentum underway to get government help for the homeless. The out-of-the-cold program is a 12-year-old Band-Aid that's pretty dirty and not sticky anymore. "Everyone in it is experiencing burnout," said Nora McCabe. She is with the Out of the Cold program at the Queen Street Mental Health Facility. "I'm a typical middle-class person who doesn't usually go on marches," said Peter Wyatt of Trinity St. Paul's United Church. In fact, he voted for Mike Harris and the Tories last election because he wanted action on the deficit and the debt. He said, "But not at the expense of the homeless. To give us a tax cut in the face of all these problems is absurd," he said. "Give the savings to the homeless, not to us." Neither Ontario Premier Mike Harris nor Toronto Mayor Mel Lastman took up the offer to speak, but Councillor Jay Layton told the crowd at Nathan Phillips Square the new provincial landlord-tenant laws mean 5,000 people are being evicted in Toronto every month. In our city, we are throwing people into the streets faster than people like yourselves can bring them in, he said. At Queen's Park, Liberal housing critic Alvin Curling said he is still awaiting action on Ann Golden's report on homelessness. A lot of names you and I don't recognize and understand, but I think the clear purpose of what they're doing is really obvious. And that's, of course, what we need here in Santa Cruz with the City Council's March 23rd reaffirmation of the sleeping ban and the blanket bans, both of which make it illegal for homeless people to survive outside in a legal fashion. Now, council members will tell you that police are not enforcing these laws very vigorously, that they only do so on complaint, that they only do so in high-profile areas, that between 11 and 8:30 a.m., even though the code of our city specifically says if you sleep, that is a crime punishable by a fine of $54 repeatedly, one fine after another if you sleep night after night. That's a pretty expensive amount of money to pay for sleeping outside when there's no legal places to sleep for 500 to 1,500 homeless people. So even though they will tell you that this doesn't happen much, the tickets aren't given much, people live in anxiety, in fear, and also they're very vulnerable. We've had cases of people getting beaten 5 to 15 people beaten in the last 3 months. It's not good. The city council is doing nothing about it. The police department, as far as I know, has not come up with any suspects or even, well, convictions certainly have not happened, and I'm not aware that they have anybody incarcerated for these crimes of beating up homeless people and for sport, troll busting. So we need middle-class people like they're doing in Toronto out on the streets saying, enough of this. Enough of this crazy claim. While we're in back in December, the city council votes that it's a human right to sleep, and then in March they vote it's a crime to sleep. The contradiction could not be sharper. It's amazing. And yet, of course, the police don't look at the human rights declarations. They look at the law. They have to enforce the law. Now, I have got to admit, there have not been reported cases of a lot of ticketing happening. In fact, I haven't heard of a ticket since it was March, possibly February. But I have heard of hassles continuing, people being hassled. Although, apparently much less than this time last year. But usually this is sort of the calm before the storm. When the weather heats up, there's a sort of a traditional series of police sweeps that happen in order to make Santa Cruz sort of a homeless cleansing. You know, in Albania and Kosovo and Yugoslavia, it's called ethnic cleansing, but here in Santa Cruz, it's homeless cleansing. Folks can just sort of, you know, sip their coffee at the coffee roasting company and downtown and, you know, notice that there aren't that many homeless people around anymore. And, of course, they can pat themselves on the back for the fact that there's so much has been done for them. But, in fact, what's been done is the police have removed them from sight. And ironically, this produces less focus on the important needs. Well, not ironically, it's actually a designed kind of policy. There's less need to deal with real problems because people are not visible. Whereas when they were visible, such as happened in Miami and Hollywood, Florida, and Fort Lauderdale, Florida, during the 5 years, last 5 years, well, the last 7 years, actually, since federal judge Clyde Atkins' Pottinger decision, that decision ruled you cannot arrest homeless people for sleeping if there are no legal places for them to sleep. People were visible, and because they were visible, massive social services were built. You know, it's interesting that when people see the realities, they have to respond to them. But if you can hide them, if you can drive them out of town, if you can force them to emigrate, if you can deport them, well, then you don't have to deal with it, do you? Phone number here, in case you want to talk about any of these issues, again, is 427-3772. 427-3772. Of course, the major issue that's been on my mind recently has been the bombing, the NATO-U.S. bombing day after day, night after night of Yugoslavia. It's killed a lot of innocent people, and it may have prompted the ethnic cleansing and killings of a lot more innocent people by a nationalist Serbian government in Yugoslavia. And I went up to San Francisco yesterday to join with 1,000 other people to demand that the bombing stop. And apparently every week in San Francisco on Saturday at noon at Powell and Market, which is where the cable car terminates in San Francisco, or one of them, they've been having these protests, these massive protests. They've been small but been getting bigger, and this one had 1,000 people. I'm going to play you some tapes of the protest, mostly a lot of conversations I had with individuals and some description of the protest by myself. I didn't really track the main speakers, though. I'm sure they were worth listening to, and I'm hoping at some point that Free Radio will be able to rebroadcast the teach-in that we had up at UCSC on last Tuesday night, which had 1,000 people in our own community, nearly 1,000 people. Certainly 500 to 1,000, I counted it, crammed into that Stevenson lecture room where people were. It was amazing. And it was kind of depressing to me that the next day there were only 40 or 50 at the town clock. But at least there were 40 or 50. And I guess there will be a vigil by the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom at 5:30. I believe it's 5:30 on Monday. They're having one every week. Now, if the Resource Center for Nonviolence could stop funding junkets to the Middle East and to Latin America and start actually dealing with the bombing that's going on in this country, what a happy lad I would be. I kind of went to them and chided them the other day for this, and they writhed in discomfort, a couple of the good workers there who essentially have to do what they're told or feel they have to. But the big boys running that place like Scott Kennedy, where are they? Come on, guys. Get your butts out there and start doing something. People are dying in Yugoslavia, and this Resource Center for Nonviolence is fundraising. I mean, come on. Let's get real. Anyway, let's tune now. Tune into what was happening up in San Francisco yesterday. Assuming I find the right tape, of course. And I think I have it here. And again, at any point, you're welcome to call in if you want to comment on what's happening. We can stop the tape and take incoming phone calls. The number is 427-3772. And we're probably going to interrupt this with a guest call from Jane Kaiser after we've done some shifted topics. We're going to shift topics a bit later in the show and talk about this involuntary commitment that is threatening psychiatric survivors. They're going to be telling you, unless you take your drugs, you will be locked up. And all this may seem attractive to folks who see people talking to themselves on the streets and feel apprehensive and frightened by that kind of behavior. It's a deadly kind of prescription for hundreds of thousands of Americans who are not engaging in any criminal behavior, but who are regarded as a kind of a social problem. It's not that their own health is at stake, as their own lives and their own health and new modes for finding ways of dealing with that, but rather it is that they don't look good to their relatives, they don't look good to the police and the merchants, and these people, they want them out of the area, out of the way, somewhere else. It's like the homeless. In fact, many of these folks are homeless. But let's turn now to people who are being made homeless by the bombing that your money is paying for. While you're sipping your coffee, they're bombing in Yugoslavia. Keep that in mind.
It's about 12:15. We're down here at Powell and Market Street in San Francisco on April 17th, and we're talking to
Chica Yankovic from San Jose, California.
And you're from Belgrade.
Yes, I'm Andrei from Belgrade, and my people are getting hit, killed, maimed, deprived of food, water, electricity, TVs. The bombs are knocking everything down. They are attacking bridges. People from Belgrade are ganging up on the three remaining bridges, protecting them with their bodies, day and night, 24 hours a day. But yet, there are factories, production plants, fuel stations being destroyed, bombed out day and night. But people keep the spirit high. They defy the pressure to give
people
in and give up.
The over here to the left of
but pressure the is tremendous. The U.S. leads the attack. They now started, I talked to my sister this morning, she said they started bombing railway station, communication lines, roads, railways, they knocked down all major bridges.
Where does your sister live?
In Belgrade. My sister lives in Belgrade. They already demolished 310 schools in Serbia. and dozens of hospitals, so the patients cannot get treatment inside. They're getting outside in the hospital yards. The lack of blood and medication, especially antibiotics and surgery equipment, is very severe. But yet, the people are still defying and keeping calm.
Have you, this is your first protest?
No, it's not my first. Anytime somebody is out, I rush to join and to raise my voice against this murderous policy run by State Department and the government. President Clinton is fully responsible for this carnage of the people and destruction of millions of humans, not only lives, but infrastructure that sustains it, that sustains the lives. Now, 2 million people in Serbia alone are left jobless because 80% of the production facilities been knocked down, and more are coming. People are reporting the fragments of a missile with the readings. Serb, happy Easter, when they bombed the Serbs on Easter Day. Or Bill and Mary, wish you the best. And that sort of a cynical message is coming from the state. Besides, they're throwing flyers from the planes.
You're also a San Franciscan, right?
I'm from San Jose.
From San Jose.
Yeah.
And how are people in San Jose responding to this? You see a lot about American opposition to the bombing in San Jose, or are people apathetic?
Whoever has brain is outrageous. Those who don't think are not involved, when they get to know, they feel anger, they feel frustrated, they are frozen in disbelief.
Right. Have you had any protests in San Jose?
Yes, we had several. We staged several protests in small groups, and in we launched a couple major demonstrations. One was in front of the Telecom Museum when Al Gore attended. Mm-hmm. There were about 300 people chanting and calling him to come out to hear our messages. But of course, he slipped away. Yeah. He slipped away as expected.
Well, it looks like a pretty big crowd today. Is this your first?
We expect to have a rally, to have a turnout of about 2,000 people. This is just the beginning of the rally.
And again, your name is?
My name is Tika Janković from San Jose. Otherwise, came from Yugoslavia, Belgrade, 15 years ago.
Well, thank you for coming, and thank you for
thank you. I don't know who's going
know
to
happening.
Hear, but you heard it. At least that's enough.
Yeah, we'll be playing this on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, can't believe it. Okay, great. I believe if American people knew what the government is doing around the world, there would be no wars around the world, and the America would be a real paradise to the Americans. It would be the lighthouse of real, true democracy, the hub of the happy world. But unfortunately, the government that represents the corporate America, not the people of America, carries out its agendas.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, brother. I wish we had more people.
I heard that 10,000 people are marching in the streets of New York today. Say no to the war, no to the bombing. And we're going to be marching here in a little while. We're going to be marching in a very united way. We're going to be marching past KRON-TV because that's the local affiliate of General Electric, NBC, who are one of the biggest defense contractors, who are making billions from this war while thousands of people in Yugoslavia are dying. We're going to have speakers here, but we want everybody to make their voices heard. So let's join together and say, U.S. NATO, out of the Balkans! U.S. NATO, out of the Balkans! U.S. NATO, out of the Balkans! U.S. NATO, out of the Balkans!
And you're listening to tapes from yesterday's.
So we have a sign here. international law, Vienna Convention of Treaties, 1963, 1980, agreements negotiated under threat of force are null and void. Section 2, Articles 51 and 52, coercion is impermissible as a negotiating instrument. Moral compass of our leaders, Albright's 96 TV comment on the killing of 5,000 per month Iraqi children, a very hard choice, but we think the price is worth it. This sign is being held up by... What's your name?
Alex Gutsch.
And Alex, this information comes from?
Public sources.
Specifically?
An article recently on the internet by Noam Chomsky. Uh-huh. Another pieces of papers that I've collected from internet, etc. From well-documented sources.
And are you yourself Yugoslavian?
I am American Serbian.
Uh-huh. And you consider yourself Serbian or Yugoslavian?
I consider myself what's left of Yugoslavia is Serbia, really, and Montenegro. Both Serbia and Montenegro are really Serbs.
Of course, Yugoslavia still includes a number of other nationalities, and one of the complaints of the State Department and one of the concerns of a lot of Americans fed to some extent by false media, but to some extent by real concerns is, you know, action against non-Serbian peoples in Yugoslavia. What's your reading on that?
My reading is the most unfortunate thing. I hate to see anybody suffer. Usually, in conflicts of this side, is the civilians that always bear the brunt of war. Unfortunately, we have to examine and really ask difficult questions how the whole thing started and for what purpose. If we do not ask those questions, if our questions are primarily concerned with tactical issues, how we conduct these raids, how many sorties we run, what is our mission, phase one, phase two, etc., etc.
What is the answer for Americans who say, I don't want to see the U.S. bombing Yugoslavia, Serbian people, but I also don't want to see the Serbian leadership engaging in ethnic cleansing? What's your answer?
Well, Serbian leadership was not engaged in ethnic cleansing. Serbian leadership was fighting a terrorist, drug-toting, drug-trafficking organization, KLA, which is trying to create a separate state within a recognized international sovereign state of Rump Yugoslavia, or Serbia, essentially, in Montenegro. And so we find ourselves, it's curious, the United States would be supporting a terrorist organization and then blaming Serbs for a genocide of 2,000 people over a period of 1 year. Of those 2,000 people that have been killed, most were KLA, to guerrillas, and then some civilian Albanians, Serbs, and Gypsies. So the total number of 2,000 killed includes all those, and we call that genocide. And yet, in Turkey, 35,000 Kurds have been slaughtered, and our media doesn't cover anything at all about it.
We're talking about
that's not genocide.
We're talking about the thing around the turn of the century, 1911.
No, talking about just recently, in the last 5 years.
Uh-huh.
But we don't say anything about it because Turkey is a member of NATO, you see. And so we have different standards for different people. On the sign that I'm carrying here, it says that our Secretary of State has a goal to say that killing of 5,000 children from 5 years to 1996 in a television interview, she says that as the sign says,
I got a cold.
He says, a very hard choice.
But we think the price is worth it.
Yeah, so now, 5,000 a month compared to 2,000 a year justify all of a sudden our involvement there.
Well, let me ask you this.
Okay.
Do you have any Albanian friends in Serbia?
No, I don't. You know why? Because I've been a long time from there. In fact, when I lived very short time in Serbia, I didn't live in Kosovo either.
I mean, do we have any? Have you been? Is this your first protest rally here?
I have also been on the Vietnam rallies.
But at this particular subject.
That's correct.
It's interesting that it takes 3 weeks of bombing to get people out to do protesting, isn't it?
Well, I think it's the times in which we live, really. I think lots of people are too busy making a living, which is a very important part of life. I don't really blame.
Yeah.
Then, on top of that, you have lots of distractions.
Yeah.
And I think people, and this is the most unfortunate thing, a lot of people are basically resigned saying the following: we have a savior in the White House. We elect him every 4 years. This is what actually Howard Zinn, Professor Howard Zinn, said in his speech at Shaquatuck place. I forgot the name, in somewhere in New York. And he basically says, you know, we go out vote every year for next savior. When in fact, and you know, and notice this, Vice President Al Gore takes claim that he invented internet. Clinton is taking credit that he is responsible for a strong economy, when in fact, the strength of economy is based on the strength of the people themselves. It's the creative talents of Americans that make America what it is, and not somebody sitting in the White House.
Very true. Again, your name is?
Malik Jovacic.
For those who want to get involved in stopping the bombing, any suggestions as to how people can help?
You know, peaceful demonstration, turning out in bigger numbers, calling your senator, these are the only proper ways, the only courses available to people like us. I mean, it would be good. See, the proper thing would be for the media to really play the role that they should be playing, and that is to examine the issues, discuss the issues, inform the public, and demand that equal treatment for everybody. If we are against atrocities, for example, in Kosovo today, then we should be equally against atrocities anywhere committed, anywhere on earth, because that's only right. And if we are quiet about it, if we bury it under the rug, then basically what we are saying, we cannot maintain or claim a high moral ground. It's not right.
Thank you. We're talking to
Erg Gowdy.
And you are a San Francisco Liberation Radio broadcaster?
Yes, I am. I have a show Fridays from 5 to 7 p.m., 93.7.
And what's your topic?
I basically talk about homeless issues, workfare issues, and I branch off into a lot of areas. And I end the last half hour of my two-hour show with old-time radio.
Well, as I remember, I last saw you preparing a Valentine for all the jagged hearts at City Hall here in San Francisco about a month and a half ago.
Yeah, that was February 12th. I was involved in an action with the Coalition on Homelessness, basically asking Mayor and Supervisor Browns to have a heart concerning homelessness. And they're showing no signs of abating. Amos Brown is going to be having another meeting of the Shopping Cart Task Force that folks should come to on Tuesday the 27th. 6 p.m. at City Hall. I forget the room number exactly.
Well, I heard his namesake, Willie Brown, is planning to go after people holding up signs on medians.
Oh, really? I thought that was Amos also.
Well, it said Willie in the Chronicle. I don't know what the story is.
Well, you know, Willie Brown is against competition. He's against democracy. He's against anybody getting in his way of, you know, making money hand over fist by selling out to large developers. So, you know, this isn't surprising that he wants to squelch any dissenting voice.
How's the Coalition on Homelessness doing? Are you planning any new protests? I guess there's the shopping cart meeting coming up. Anything else?
Yes, we have an action on the 28th at UN Plaza. It's on the grassy area around from the BART thing near the BART elevator on Market Street about 7. It's going to be at noon. We're basically asking the city to provide $10 million for low-income housing in this town, you know, to give homeless people housing, which is the only thing that makes them homeless is they don't have a home.
Well, isn't it because that they are severely disabled mentally, drunken bums who are essentially violent and need to be forcibly medicated, as I read in the new issue of Street Spirit is now, should we say, rolling down the pike a new bill to require mandatory medication of people?
Well, the city has in place an innocuous titled thing called 647F, otherwise known as Three Drunks, You're Out. The reports are that only monolingual Hispanic folks are actually falling into that trap, and it's
Well, we know Hispanics are naturally drunker, right? That's a known fact. That's what blacks are lazy, Hispanics are drunk, and gays are silly. Isn't that pretty much true?
Yeah, well, and hippies sit around smoking pot and don't hang out at rallies and talk politics.
Well, these are known facts. This is common sense.
Yeah, well, sense ain't so common these days, I've noticed. No, there's a lot of people being abused by the system to no good purpose. It seems that, you know, every new regime that comes into City Hall here in San Francisco has a new idea that's really a rehash, same old idea. So you get the idea that all these plans are coming from the same people and that the mayors that just turn out to be figureheads. And
you mean like the downtown merchants and things of that sort?
Things like that, yeah. Yeah, what's his name? The Gap, we've got a store right behind here,
yeah.
Monolith to his corporate power. But yeah, government's in the business of promoting business these days. It really doesn't do anything for the people. I mean, all you have to do is ride Muni in San Francisco to know that Willie Brown can't keep a decent promise to our hardworking folks.
Well, this is quite an update. Is there more you want to add?
There's about 1,000 things I'd like to say, but I'm actually sort of wandering around seeing what's happening at this rally today, so I'm sure I'll run across you again.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And I'm your host, Bathrooms Pierre Robert Norris, for the next 2 hours, till 1:30. You can join us. 427-3772 is the call-in number. We're talking about the bombing, the NATO-U.S. bombing of Yugoslavia. We're talking about the harassment of homeless people in Santa Cruz. We're talking about civil rights for poor people who are being trod underfoot. 427-3772 is the number to call in. And I'm going to take a break from the demonstration yesterday, which you've been hearing excerpts from up in San Francisco, to talk about another topic. Before I do, a quick announcement. Here's a flyer I picked up there. Stop the war. 3 weeks of bombing. What are the results? 800,000 Kosovan refugees. Hundreds of Serbian and Kosovan civilians killed by U.S. NATO bombs. Factories, refineries, bridges, and cities destroyed. Russia announces it will retarget American cities with nuclear missiles. More and more talk of tens of thousands of U.S. NATO ground troops. How can we stop this madness? We need to come together to organize an anti-war movement in the U.S. which can provide an inspiration for anti-war activists from London to Moscow to Belgrade. No one can answer the tough questions for us. Why is the U.S. bombing? Will the war spread? How can we stop Milosevic's ethnic cleansing? What can be done to help the refugees? Everyone who opposes the war has to come together and discuss and debate these questions ourselves. Join the anti-war movement. And the next coalition meeting, and this is up in San Francisco, and I'm sure there are local things happening too, is at the Civic Center BART 995 Market Street address, and that's Monday, April 19th, that's tomorrow, 7 p.m., ad hoc coalition to oppose U.S.-NATO war in the Balkans. And the phone number, for those of you who want to call and up to San Francisco and get information, is 415-765-7650. That's the ad hoc coalition to oppose U.S.-NATO war in the Balkans, 415-765-7650. And I invite any listeners who have a local phone number of an organizing group, and I have not been able to find one yet, that is regularly organizing against this war. I guess WILP, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, is doing its Monday protest at the town clock every week. But in terms of a specific ad hoc coalition designed to fight this bombing activity, to enlarge protests so that we can finally end it as we ended the other conflicts, or at least the Vietnam conflict, I don't have a number yet. So if you have a number, please give me a call here. You can call on air at 427-3772, or you can call the Huff line, the line for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. That's Huff at 423-HUFF-4833, 423-4833. You have a local number for groups that are organizing against the war. I was part of the protest for about 2 hours. We marched from, well, we actually sauntered from Powell and Market all the way around considerable radius throughout the town. Well, we went up to Van Ness, we went down Van Ness to Market, we went back to UN Plaza, for those of you who know the area. A lot of people. And I have to say, however, that I didn't see any Albanians in the march. Actually, I did see two dissenting Albanians who were actually supporting the bombing. And I wanted to get some perspective from the Kosovars. Is there support for the bombing among the people of Kosovo? This or the people that were in Kosovo and have been driven out? You certainly read that in the papers, and it's disputed by Serbian sources and anti-war sources here, some of them. I'd like to, if anybody has any information about that, I'd love to hear some specifics on that. What do the Yugoslavians of Albanian heritage have to say about the bombing, the NATO bombing? There's also going to be a teach-in Thursday, April 29th, up in San Francisco at New College at 7 p.m. at 777 Valencia, at the corner of 19th Street. Again, more information from that, the Ad Hoc Coalition to Oppose U.S. NATO War in the Balkans, 415-765-7650. Street Spirit is a newspaper which homeless people sell in order to make coffee money. It's not a living, I can tell you that. But a lot of homeless people sell it just to get a few dollars so they can get in and out of the rain, so they can, you know, buy some toothpaste, you name it. And it's not just a device for panhandling, although it is that. It is also a device for spreading information and It's got some great articles that you're not going to find in mainstream media. And one of them I'm going to read for you now. It's called The Unraveling of Civil Rights by Sally Zinman. And this is about new assaults on psychiatric survivors. A nationwide campaign to expand forced treatment of people diagnosed as mentally ill has now been introduced into California. The kickoff for this agenda was on February 16th at a joint hearing of the state legislature entitled Criminalization of the Untreated Mentally Ill, held by the Assembly Select Committee on Mental Health and Senate Select Committee on Developmental Disabilities and Mental Health. The initiator of the hearing, Assemblyperson Helen Thompson, Democrat of Davis, invited E. Fuller Torrey as the lead, quote, expert. Torrey is nationally known as an extremist for his biological genetic views about people with mental disabilities and his crusade to expand forced treatment throughout the nation. Of the 25 persons invited to testify, only 12 out of 240 minutes were given to persons opposing this expansion of forced treatment for psychiatrically labeled people. The formal hearing was a biased portrayal of the issues orchestrated to support recommendations for gutting California's civil commitment law. And an aside, I'll remind all you listeners out there, in case you don't already know, the current civil commitment law does not allow the authorities to lock you up as psychiatrically labeled unless you are A, a danger to yourself, B, a danger to others, or C, gravely disabled. That's been the law for 30 years here in California under the Landrus-Petras Shore Act. But that apparently is going to change. These recommendations were introduced by a white paper, a report by the LPS Reform Task Force, the results of a task force organized by the L.A. County affiliates of the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, NAMI, and the Southern California Psychiatric Society. Included in the recommendations are loosening commitment criteria to such all-inclusive concepts as, quote, passive danger to self, quote, recently substantially deteriorating from a former level of functioning or is likely to substantially deteriorate, quote, unable to appreciate or understand or lacks consistent judgment to make informed decisions about his or her need for treatment. These are pretty subjective criteria. I'm giving you another aside here. And these are significantly different than the current standing criteria, which are danger to self, danger to others, and gravely disabled. Continuing with Sally Zinman's article, The Unraveling of Civil Rights in the April Street Spirit. Also recommended by this white paper are outpatient involuntary commitment, extension of 14-day holds to 28 days, reduction of the standards of proof of the various procedural commitment hearings, and combining some of these hearings into one-stop hearings. Essentially, the protective fabric of civil rights unravels and the net of commitment expands to catch almost anyone for almost anything, any place, in an institution or an involuntary outpatient commitment in his or her own home. And the procedural safeguards to protect a person's rights during the processes are severely reduced. However, mental health clients attended the meeting en masse. Despite rain that amounted to a storm at times, about 100 clients from around the state rallied on the steps of the Capitol. The rally was organized by both the California Network of Mental Health Clients, the statewide voice for and of mental health clients, and the California Association of Mental Health Patient Rights Advocates. The group packed the hearing room with fluorescent buttons reading, "No expansion of involuntary treatment." When the hearing opened up to the public, they stood in line to testify, saying, "Noncompliance is the result of forced treatment. More forced treatment is not a solution. We need holistic, voluntary services that have not been made available, not more forced treatment." And, of course, I remind you again, another aside, forced treatment has been massive amounts of psychiatric drugs, shock therapy, and, of course, in the older days, lobotomy, plus involuntary hospitalization. Room. The agenda to abolish the freedom and self-empowerment that mental health clients have struggled to attain in the last 30 years is spreading across the nation. In New York, the Attorney General has proposed a law, the Involuntary Outpatient Treatment Act, in which close family members, housemates, or treatment providers, with the support of a psychiatrist, would be able to obtain a court order for an outpatient who has had difficulties adhering to a treatment program, quote unquote. According to New York Attorney General Elliot Spitzer, if the outpatient violates an order by going off his or her prescribed medication, He could then be held for a 72-hour emergency evaluation and or the administration of a prescribed medication. Editorials from the LA Times to the New York Post are supporting these repressive and regressive laws. The Post states in favor of the Attorney General's plan, quote, finally the word is down the hatch, like it or not. The proponents of this agenda are conducting a methodical propaganda campaign linking mental illness with violence. Like infectious tuberculosis, the reasoning goes, society must be protected and forcible intervention is justified. Isolated incidents of violence around the country are seized upon and publicized in the media and attributed to, quote, untreated mental illness. The editorial in the New York Post is entitled, quote, A Plan for Safer Streets. In the U.S. Congress, a bill has been introduced to create a mental health advisory committee to make recommendations to the Congress based on the premise that mental illness causes violence. In fact, people with mental disabilities are no more violent than the average citizen. The MacArthur Violence Risk Assessment Study found that in the absence of alcohol or substance abuse, a person with a mental disability was no more likely to be violent than were other people living in their neighborhoods. People who have or have had psychiatric diagnoses are being demonized as targets for society's fear. The fear is being whipped up as part of a strategy to advance the agenda of expanding forced treatment. The strategists have no concern about how adversely the aiding and abetting of discrimination towards mental patients affects clients throughout the country. They are fearmongers, stirring up hysteria, and people with psychiatric disabilities are the witches of today. Assemblyperson Thompson has introduced a spot bill, AB 1028, to advance this agenda of expanding forced treatment of persons with mental disabilities. For more information, contact California Network of Mental Health Clients, 1722 J Street, Suite 324, Sacramento, 95814. Phone 916-443-3232. Email main, at CNMHC, California Network of Mental Health Clients, .com. And rather than repeat these for you to write down, do give a call if you're interested in following up on any of this to oppose AB 1028 and to support the right of people to refuse medication if they're not a danger to themselves, to others, or gravely disabled. Give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I will put you in touch with those numbers again. I will read them over to you and at your leisure. That's a story in Street Spirit called The Unraveling of Civil Rights by Sally Zinman, a really good April issue. And there's actually a second story called A Pact with the Psychiatric Drug Industry by David Oakes. And I think this is a reprint from Dendron magazine, which is a great magazine for psychiatric survivors. Takes on the drug industry. I don't know if I'm going to read that to you now. It's a long article. I think I'll read a bit of it. But before I do, let's see what we've got on the phones. Hi there. You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, Robert. This is Jane.
Jane Kaiser. Hey, Jane. You work with a group. What is that group called?
PERC, Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective.
And what does PERC do?
Try to help with the rights of mental patients and try to inform the public of the current and potential abuses of psychiatry.
So you've been listening to our show?
Yeah.
What's your feeling of that article by Sally Zinman that I just read?
Well, I agree with Sally Zinman. She's been in the anti-psychiatric movement a long time.
Mm-hmm. What would be the implications of? Well, let me put it this way: Do you have more to add? You've been kind of on the cutting edge of this stuff.
Well, I found a Dendron from summer of 96, and it talks about the escalation of the chemical crusade as far as outside commitment, that if you didn't take your drugs that they wanted you to take, that would be then forced to.
Right.
what, almost 3 years ago now, right? Well, I know that I used to be a... 96, yeah. I used to be a very ardent subscriber to Dendron. I think I let my subscription lapse. And I imagine they're covering it locally. I read in the second article that I mentioned that I was going to read from Street Spirit, which I encourage people to go get.
Do you want me to call back later?
No, no. Not at all. But I'm just going to kind of... I'm going to highlight a few of the things and ask you to comment on them. Unless you... whatever you feel like doing.
Sure.
This article by David Oakes, who I guess is a Dendron writer, is called An Alarming Pact with the Psychiatric Drug Industry. And here's how he begins the article. It begins, picture this. Every morning, 7 days a week, a car pulls up in front of your house, as it has every day for years. Inside that car is a locked box of containers with powerful psychiatric drugs. An eager government-paid mental health worker jumps out of the car, rings your doorbell, and presents you with your daily prescribed psychiatric drugs. You are asked to swallow the pills in front of the worker and drink water to show that the pills are down. If you swallow, the worker runs off to the next dose drop. If you refuse, you face repeated visits, cajoling, pressure, and in some states even the threat of immediate detention in a locked psychiatric facility. Does that sound like science fiction? It's already...
That actually pretty much has been going on in Santa Cruz.
Really?
Under one form or another. For decades.
So, in other words, even though I had thought that people's rights in California are still protected by these, you know, you can't be theoretically incarcerated without the claim of, you know, gravely disabled, a danger to self or danger to others. That's not true.
I don't think so.
Really? Tell us more about that. I mean, is there a... So people, I mean, is this...
Well, it's kind of like, they're just changing the wording to kind of fit what's going on and make it legal. Like, we're talking about the NAMI policy.
NAMI, of course, is the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill.
Yeah.
What is this group?
And that's the... kind of like friends and family of the mentally ill that really uphold the psychiatric medical model practices, you know, drugging, electroshock, and confinement. And, but they kind of, you could base your psychiatric labeling for a person on information and that you also lack capacity and that you needed treatment. So that simply refusing a psychiatric drug could in fact become the grounds for commitment.
In fact, that is, of course, one of the things that they're recommending in this white paper report by the LPS Reform Task Force.
Yeah, right, because NAMI leads it, so.
It says it's organized by NAMI and the Southern California Psychiatric Society.
Yeah, which are all very, very funded by the psychopharmaceutical industry.
Well, let me be the devil's advocate here. You yourself have been subjected to various psychiatric procedures and...
Right, which would make me automatically eligible for this program.
Well, isn't this a
because
real opportunity?
In Wisconsin, it included allowing past history to be a factor in commitment, so that means that if you've ever been committed to a mental institution, you know, they can get you again, which they do anyway, but...
So you're saying that not only is it a bad policy on its face, but you're saying that it is actually just... it's a practice that's been going on for years, and now it's just being put into...
Yeah.
It's being legalized after the fact?
I think so. Like, commitment automatically decrees a person incompetent to refuse psychiatric drugs or treatment.
So what about the claims? I mean, we had, of course, a psychiatric advocate, funded by the county or the state, George Cavallo, on the air, talking about the rights of psychiatric folks held in psychiatric facilities and those outside them. And, of course, you know, we had various stats on, you know, you're allowed to refuse medication, you have to be given a hearing before they can force you to take medication.
Yeah, wealthy, but they always have waivers. And they've always had a waiver that says, except on an emergency basis.
Mm-hmm. And the emergency basis is 24 hours a day, or?
I don't know. Yeah.
You're suggesting...
They just get around every right that a person so-called has.
So, I mean, you're saying this not because you're brooding in a paranoid snit in your house, but you actually have been in contact with folks who've been subjected to these processes in the last year?
Yeah, pretty much since 76 I visited the 99 psychiatric inmate place on 7th Harbor Hills.
And so you're saying that the current procedures at Dominican and Harbor Hills are really to ignore existing law and to act as though this new, much more invasive law, which allows passive danger to self, recently substantially deteriorating from a former level of functioning, unable to appreciate or understand, lacks consistent judgment to make informed decisions as the basis for... Is it the basis for drugging people or the basis for holding people on long holds? Or both?
Their words, like paranoid and delusional and different kinds of psychiatric mumbo-jumbo, to keep anyone they want incarcerated for as long as they want and give them any drugs they want. And you mentioned, somebody coming by once a day. Well, they don't have to do that for years. And probably, I don't know for how long, but they've had Prolixin shots and Haldol shots. They can give you a Haldol shot, and that lasts a whole month.
Wow, yeah, I've seen people on Haldol, and it's not a pretty sight. It's also, I imagine, even worse to experience.
Oh, yeah. It's like torture.
You've had Haldol yourself?
I've had a shot of either Thorazine or Haldol.
Right. They used to give the two together in the late 60s and early 70s, I know. Wow. Is there much organizing locally to reclaim the rights of psychiatric survivors?
Well, that hopefully will come about by your radio program. If there's any activists out there who would like to contact a group that works really closely with the inmates of mental institutions.
Do you want to give out your number on the air, or shall I have the...
Oh, sure. Uh-huh. It's 475-7904.
475-7904 is PIRC, Patient Inmates Rights Collective?
Psychiatric Inmates.
Sorry, Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective. There's that word again. Well, what I think I'm going to do, Jane, we're talking to Jane Kaiser, is read this second article, and then if you feel that, and you probably will, that you have some thoughts on that, just give me a call back, and let's do round two in about 10 or 15 minutes.
Sure.
How does that sound?
Fine.
Okay, we've been talking to Jane Kaiser, and hopefully we'll talk to her again.
And, of course, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and the call-in number here, and the line is open for those of you who have had concerns or bad experiences or good experiences with the psychiatric establishment locally. What do you think about this new plan to liberalize the powers of the psychiatric police? Is this a good thing? Is it going to help a lot of people? Or is it, in fact, what I and Jane are concerned about, a way of, well, actually just rationalizing ongoing repression of people based upon these psychiatric labels and based upon behaviors that are considered socially unacceptable? And indeed, based upon personal problems that are being treated as chemical imbalances. Let's hear from you. 427-3772.
Students at the university boldly and openly defy their country's tyranny, resist the hell of Hitler's Germany. And the leaflets fell to the corridors like petals of a flower, charging, we are your conscience, now is the hour. They spoke truth to Nazi power. When they were rounded up, these few who dared participate in crimes against the state, no death would certain be their fate. The prison they would activate, for one brave death can thousands liberate. So the gavel fell at Munich, and then the guillotine on those whose crime was speaking out against the war machine, against the brutal and obscene. Nuremberg, Vandenberg, our resistance grows. Nuremberg, Vandenberg, harvest a white rose. Sunrise at Nuremberg, 1945. The high command of Hitler's war were rounded up and tried. Their victims came and testified. Those with strength who had survived the horror and the cruelty came alive. And a white rose bloomed at Nuremberg that spanned the seven seas. A judgment for a higher law, crimes against the peace, crimes against humanity and peace. Nuremberg, Vandenberg, our resistance grows. Nuremberg, Vandenberg, harvest a white rose. Nuremberg, Vandenberg, our resistance grows. Nuremberg, Vandenberg, harvest a white rose. Pre-dawn at Vandenberg, 40 years have passed. One lone figure braves the dark into the Air Force base. She enters with clear conscience, strikes against the silence, blows upon the science of the nuclear arms race. And the hammer fell at Vandenberg, its echo heard worldwide, a joyful noise of hope against the plans of genocide. One more drop of rain to turn the tide. Nuremberg, Vandenberg, our resistance grows. Nuremberg, Vandenberg, harvest a white rose. Nuremberg, Vandenberg, our resistance grows. Nuremberg, Vandenberg, harvest a white rose. Minutes to midnight, future in a cloud, your hammer sunlight breaking, Hans and Sophie would be proud. For on their prison wall they vowed, against all tyranny hold out for freedom, and the children shouted loud. And the rain came down to wash away the blood upon the chain, as the chaplain pointed to the sun, saying, it shall rise again. Someday soon the sun shall rise again. Nuremberg, Vandenberg, our resistance grows. Nuremberg, Vandenberg, harvest a white rose. Nuremberg, Vandenberg, our resistance grows. Nuremberg, Vandenberg, harvest a white rose. Nuremberg, Vandenberg, our resistance grows. Nuremberg, Vandenberg, harvest a white rose. Nuremberg, Vandenberg, our resistance grows. Nuremberg, Vandenberg, harvest a white rose.
And that, of course, was Mark Levy, Nuremberg, Vandenberg, about the White Rose, the group of students in Nazi Germany who sought peace in the middle of the war and were quickly taken off and shot for it, of course. And they also, it's also mentioned in that song, the woman who dissembled a nuclear warhead in the Vandenberg Air Force Base, if I'm not mistaken. I could have some of the facts wrong on this, but I believe that was Katya Komisarek, who is also now a pro bono attorney who defended me and others up in San Francisco about 2 years ago and is still defending people. She defended the Biotic Bakers Brigade people. We were trying to reclaim housing, weary housing, unoccupied housing that should be available for poor and homeless people in San Francisco on the Presidio. The Biotic Bakers Brigade, of course, was trying to point out Willie Brown's preposterous pomposity and give folks the kind of laugh that liberates by putting a pie in his face. And perhaps some of our local politicians will share in that vicious fate soon. Anyway, the song talks about war crimes and the struggle against them. And, you know, that seems to me to be one of the main casualties of this war. I mean, the casualties, of course, are Albanians being ethnically cleansed and Yugoslavians and being shot and bombed, and not bombed, I guess, is what they're getting right now until the ground troops move in. But the other casualty is clearly international law, the chance to resolve conflicts through collective security and through the kind of international peace process. I was suggesting the other day, I was looking for a solution. How can you oppose the bombing if you don't have another solution? Well, of course, you can oppose the bombing anyway. And so we don't have another solution, but this certainly is not the solution. In fact, it's a counter solution. But I was proposing that people they put the money that all the bombs would cost into a fund for a month and offer it up as a big kitty to all the warring participants, the billion or half billion dollars that it costs per month to do this. I think it would be a massive inducement to get to the peace table. I think you might call it bribery. I think it makes a lot more sense. But as I said, a major casualty of this conflict is international law. And of course, and the reason it's such a casualty is because the U.S. is doing so through NATO, under claims of international law and stopping genocide and things of that sort, when in fact it's gotten no authorization to act from the U.S. Congress, no authorization to act from the U.N. It's the first bombing of a country in violation of... it's the first really act of aggressive war since World War II of this sort. It's really this kind of clear aggressive war by an outside power. At least that was what the claim, and I thought it had some substance made yesterday at the rally against the bombing of Yugoslavia. But let me turn back to the topic I was talking about before, the forced treatment of folks psychiatrically labeled. I began to read an article by David Oakes in Street Spirit, the April issue, which you can get down at... well, in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz or from any homeless vendor downtown. Pick it up. It's a dollar. In October 1998, leaders of the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, NAMI, met with U.S. Congress people to announce one of its major campaigns for the next 4 years. NAMI's proposal is based on something called the Program of Assertive Community Treatment, or PACT, Program of Assertive Community Treatment, PACT, which NAMI says is now being used extensively in 6 states and is being tried out in 19 others. NAMI wants to have the U.S. Congress pass laws so that this PACT model will be used throughout every state in the nation by the year 2002, reaching hundreds of thousands of people in their own homes. On the surface, PACT and a similar program known as just ACT has elements that sound good to some members. Namely, the stated purpose is to try to keep people living out in the community instead of going into locked psychiatric facilities. PACT tends to have a very low client-to-staff ratio of about 10 to 1. Staff is available 24 hours a day to bring personal, emotional support services to people in their own homes on demand, rather than requiring a person to find and use various programs during limited hours far from home. Some PACT staff build close relationships with clients, for example, regularly washing a woman client's hair. PACT is an integrated team approach rather than a bunch of fragmented services. And finally, vocational rehabilitation and other community services are included. But NAMI, National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, which is led by parents of people using the psychiatric system, has a history many readers may already know. While some NAMI members do support human rights, NAMI has collected millions of dollars of donations from the psychiatric drug industry. More than half of NAMI's major corporate donors, according to NAMI's own annual report, are psychiatric drug manufacturers. As usual, NAMI is using this program as a Trojan horse. This wraparound service, as it's sometimes called, looks pretty on the outside, but inside you find a lot of medication militia hiding out. While PACT programs vary state to state, in many states, PACT is actually wrapped around the centerpiece of medication compliance, raising concerns about human rights violations. In Canada, ACT, which I presume is Assertive Community Treatment, is currently being promoted in Ontario, and the Support Coalition sponsoring group in Toronto called People Against Coercive Treatment. Cleverly, it also has the acronym PACT. ACT is being promoted in Ontario. The group People Against Coercive Treatment, PACT, which opposes ACT, held a protest on October 30, 1998, outside a conference promoting the model. Don Whites, a protest organizer, said, "We hope resistance to ACT spreads across Ontario damn soon before the right-wing Ontario government passes a community treatment order, forced drugging law, this year or next. We have lots of hard work to do to defeat this new wave of psychiatric and government assault on psychiatric survivors, the homeless, and poor people. We're going to fight this psychiatric fascism masquerading as community treatment and never, never give up." UK members report the push for assertive outreach is on there, too. The Support Coalition, that's the group in Canada fighting ACT or PACT, has obtained one of the main videotapes promoting PACT, produced by Duke University and based on the PACT in South Carolina. Revealingly, the video is called Hospital Without Walls. This video shows that making sure people stay on their meds is a huge part of the PACT model. The psychiatric drugs typically being used in PACT are not like recreational street drugs. PACT drugs tend to be the super powerful neuroleptics such as Haldol, Prolixin, Clozapine, and many other brand names. While some people choose to take neuroleptics, they can kill. In the long run, neuroleptics can cause persistent brain changes, so the person may end up with worse emotional and mental problems than before they started the drugs. Therefore, it can be difficult to quit neuroleptics. Withdrawal can unmask these underlying neuroleptic-induced brain changes, leading to a vicious cycle of more and more psychiatric drugging for life. The PACT video shows a person receiving a long-term neuroleptic injection. As the narrator says, "Medication can't always prevent a crisis, but it's the cornerstone of stability in the seriously persistent mentally ill and a primary target of PACT treatment and supervision." Note that word, cornerstone. A PACT team member supervises people setting up their own med boxes for the week. For many of their clients, PACT goes out to homes and personally makes sure they're, quote, on their meds. As the narrator put it, all staff share in making daily morning and evening medication deliveries for those who need it. In the video, the music goes up like it's some kind of exciting police squad hitting the street. Staff are driving around doing their medication deliveries, sometimes literally running between house and car in the rain to get the job done. Says one of the workers particularly dedicated, "We go all over the place. If we feel like they won't take their medication as directed, then we'll be there every day, morning and night. We open the package and watch them swallow it. Some patients are chronically resistant to this, even after years." Chronically resistant is another way to describe people trying to say no. For some people who don't want psychiatric drugs, PACT staff are on the doorstep every day, sometimes several times a day, for years. Viewers of the video see clients answer their doors with cups of water in their hands. The worker quickly opens the drug box. The person pops the pills while standing in the doorway, swallows some water, then the worker dashes off to the next drug delivery, known as a dose drop. As one PACT person puts it, "Medication is the key to controlling their symptoms, and that's what we try to teach them." The video shows a 24-year-old African-American. The narrator says, "Diagnosed schizophrenic, she will have to take medications for the rest of her life, a fact she did not easily accept." In the video, Lori Flynn, director of NAMI, National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, makes an interesting slip of the tongue. PACT is a real safety net around their relative. Safety nets are supposed to be under people, not around them. A range of techniques from encouragement to court orders are already being used to gain med compliance in PACT. One of the states says it is a high adherence to the PACT model is Rhode Island, which uses mobile treatment teams. There are now 14 teams there with more than 600 clients. I interviewed Gloria Mazza, who directs the program, and asked her if her program actually visits some of the clients at home each day to deliver psychiatric drugs. Yes, said Gloria, part of our program here can include a daily drop of medications to the person's home or even a dose drop several times a day. For those clients who receive depot injectables such as Haldol, most are at home when they receive the injection. We have a nurse who visits them for their injection. What do packed staff do if the person doesn't answer the door, Mazza explains. The team will sit down in a meeting and bring in information from everyone, family, friends, police, and will come up with a strategy and a plan. Sometimes it involves standing at the door, talking, asking, could I come back at a later time, like tomorrow at 10, and we can go out for a cup of coffee? We do what's needed. It's a continuous treatment approach. We build relationships. For a, quote, very few clients, Mazza said, court orders are used to back up this, quote, relationship. An aside from your announcer here, from your reader, I guess it's better to come back every day than to bust in with guns, as our police did on Button Street against a man who had his own mental problems, but who was shot four times, Brian Andrus, in a still uninvestigated situation with the Santa Cruz Police Department. I suppose that's better. However, this forcible medication approach was used in Monterey and Seaside in the case of Charles Vaughn Sr., another African-American who was shot dead by police, allegedly for wielding a corkscrew because he wouldn't take his medications. We've talked about that on the air before, and that case presumably is still being investigated. But it's frightening to me, this article by David Oakes called An Alarming Pact with the Psychiatric Drug Industry, and I'll continue reading it. Jerry Anderson, who supervises the Idaho PAC program, confirms that they use medication deliveries there, though he added, we're more flexible than the original PACT model. He didn't sound real flexible. Idaho's new Involuntary Outpatient Commitment, IOC, law went into effect in January 1999. Some 36 U.S. states and the District of Columbia now have IOC, Involuntary Outpatient Commitment, allowing courts to order people to stay on psychiatric drugs. Anderson confirmed his PACT will certainly act as the eyes, ears, and enforcement for this court-ordered forced drugging. Adding up PACT plus involuntary outpatient commitment can equal a horrible human rights disaster, impacting thousands of people living in their own homes. NAMI, that's the National Association of the Mentally Ill, issued a news release last October announcing their campaign to have Congress mandate PACT nationally. To boost the effort, NAMI has issued a new book, A Manual for PACT Startup, a wide variety of techniques to prompt and supervise those with medication adherence problems, quote-unquote, are listed. A Wisconsin activist familiar with PACT, which began in Madison, said clients have described it as organized stalking. While many of these methods are based on repetitive convincing and cajoling, PACT is also at times directly involved in outright coercion and force. As the manual explains, when clients are ordered by the court take medications, or when medication treatment is a condition of probation or parole, the team accepts responsibility for adherence and for reporting back to the legal authority. In these situations, the team usually directly supervises medication taking. Missing from the PACT video and manual is any in-depth discussion of consumer empowerment, consumer-directed services, peer support, promoting alternatives, or advocacy systems. It's as if these concepts had never been invented. NAMI says PACT is currently used statewide in Delaware, Idaho, Michigan, Rhode Island, Texas, and Wisconsin. An additional 19 states and the District of Columbia are implementing PACT demonstration projects. So half the U.S. states already have some PACT activity. NAMI has asked Congress to pass laws requiring the Federal Mental Health Block Grant and Health Care Financing Administration to mandate and fund PACT throughout every state. NAMI hopes to get help from a new congressional working group on mental health that it is proposing. And now, a sip of tea. Back to David Oakes' article, A Pact with the Psychiatric Drug Industry. One of the biggest barriers to PACT, and I remind you listeners that what PACT is the... PACT is an acronym for the Program of Assertive Community Treatment, which involves going to people's houses with their drugs and cajoling, pressuring, indeed in many cases forcing them to take serious, in some cases, health-affecting psychiatric medication. One of the biggest barriers to PACT is cost. Neil Meisler, a promoter of the PACT model, notes in a survey of 11 PACT and ACT programs in 1996 that the mean expenditure per consumer is $6,914, a range of $5,000 to $18,000. His study shows that about 40% of PACT expenditures are paid for by federal taxpayers through Medicare. All of this means more money for the drug manufacturers. PACT has actually been incubating for more than 20 years. A number of psychiatric survivors, activists, have developed a love-hate relationship with PACT during this time. When PACT is totally voluntary, advocates admire the people power approach, which reaches out to people in their own homes. But all advocates we've talked to are chilled by the central role of medication compliance in many PACTs. If PACT is based on building close, trusting relationships with clients, then also acting as med police is an obvious conflict of interest. By pushing this PACT program, NAMI, National Association for the Mentally Ill, leaders are showing everyone that they are not giving up on their campaign to make it easier to commit and forcibly treat people. However, NAMI's chemical crusade has suffered a major setback in 1998. Support Coalition proudly contributed to that setback. NAMI announced in November of 97 that they were joining forces with an extreme organization called Treatment Advocacy Center, TAC, to promote or to create NAMI-TAC. The primary stated purpose of NAMI-TAC was to promote the use of involuntary psychiatric procedures. This Treatment Advocacy Center, TAC, fueled by hundreds of thousands of dollars in donations from the Stanley Foundation, is led by one of the most feverishly pro-force psychiatrists in the world, E. Fuller Torrey. Torrey has a part-time position in the U.S. National Institute of Mental Health, which is now working hand-in-hand with Stanley Foundation research projects. Diverse advocates for human rights in the mental health system, including Support Coalition, fought back against NAMI and scored a win. A wide spectrum of advocates, psychiatric survivors, mental health consumers, parents, and organizations created a grassroots uprising uniting people with usually conflicting views. We convinced NAMI leaders to distance NAMI from TAC. The day after an especially tumultuous national conference in July 1998, NAMI's executive director, Lori Flynn, announced plans to sever their relationship with TAC. It's true the severing may mean that links between NAMI and TAC are simply going from overt to covert. After all, 1999 marks the 20th year that NAMI has pursued more forced psychiatry, and it is expected to continue to do so. TAC itself has simply dropped the initials NAMI from in front of its name and is pushing ahead with its plans to make it far easier to force psychiatric procedures and to commit people by changing laws all over the U.S. However, the severing is still an important victory. Quite a few members and non-members of NAMI worked together on the effort to split up NAMI-TAC. Inside NAMI, the Consumer Council and state affiliate leaders officially criticized NAMI-TAC. Outside NAMI, groups such as Mad Nation and Support Coalition mobilized people through publishing an email campaign to NAMI leaders, a national protest in Washington, D.C. on May 2nd, and more. When the dust cleared, E. Fuller Torrey was furious about the divorce between his pet project, TAC, and NAMI. Without the official support of NAMI's grassroots members, TAC is just an eccentric think tank. An incredibly insulting letter from Torrey to NAMI Consumer Council President Wesley Alcorn was publicized by Dendron magazine. In it, Torrey blasted Alcorn and claimed that the cause of this mysterious rebellion was that Alcorn was acting grandiose and needed his medication adjusted. In other words, NAMI-TAC never knew what hit it. A spirited human rights force that included many Support Coalition members. Since pro-force crusaders devalue our humanity, we will always have the element of surprise. We will dump this toxic alphabet soup, PACT, IOC, NAMI, TAC, NIMH, National Institute for Mental Health, and APA, the American Psychiatric Association. For more information, contact Support Coalition, P.O. Box 11284, Eugene, Oregon. And if you want more information, give a call to the Huff Line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-HUFF. You've been listening to an article, A Pact with the Psychiatric Drug Industry, by David Oakes, probably reprinted from Dendron magazine, which has a lot of stuff by psychiatric survivors. But you can read this article in Street Spirit, the April issue. Pick it up from your local homeless vendor.
My radio is trying to be profits for some fat-ass CEO. Screw the FCC. Set your radio free. My radio is trying to stay in line, but it got tired of OJ all the time. It said, why can't I tell people things? Set your radio free, yeah. Screw the FCC, yeah. Get your radio, set your radio free. My radio is feeling so confused about the stuff that's on the evening news. It said, why are all these people telling me what's going on? Screw the FCC, set your radio free. Could not take the same old song. It said we could have our own top 10 of songs we like to do. Screw the FCC, set your radio free. Yeah, set your radio free. Yeah, screw the FCC. Yeah, get your radio, set your radio free. Set your radio free. Yeah, screw the FCC. Yeah, get your radio, set your radio free. Well, my mama said, don't play around with electricity. But now my voice is heard across the hills of Tennessee. My radio is driving me insane. And then it said goodbye to Philip K. And we all hope his retirement is as pleasant as could be. Screw the FCC. Set your radio free. Set your radio free, yeah. Screw the FCC, yeah. Get your radio, set your radio free. Set your radio free, yeah. Screw the FCC, yeah. Get your radio, set your radio. Hail and well, let your radio. Set your radio free.
And that was a beautiful voice of Carol Denny, Failure to Disperse, Set Your Radio Free. This is your radio. I hope you are continuing to set it free, and maybe you can even help others to do that. Give us a call at 427-3772. That's Free Radio Santa Cruz's on-air studio line, if you find anything we're saying or anything we're discussing worthy of your attention or something that you want to contribute to. We're going to take a moment or two to give psychiatric advocate, or I should say psychiatric survivor advocate, Jane Kaiser, an opportunity to call back in if she has any thoughts on the David Oakes article. She may or may not give us a call. I'm not sure what... it could be her right now.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hey there, you're back.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
Well, I think it would be just disastrous to have outpatient commitment, but it's happening to just about everybody I know that live in board and care homes and stuff. You must take your drug. You know, I don't know if you want to know how disastrous they are.
Oh, definitely. Let's hear about the disaster.
Well, I think you mentioned that one of the side effects is death. They do kill. One shot. Anyway,
coffee and stay tuned for the next 2.5 hours in Free Radio Santa Cruz. Horse, Bud Skill's frightened voice of your very own Uncle Robert North here on Baffert Pier Broadside. Civil rights for the poor. They come for Serbians, Albanians, Yugoslavians, or Santa Cruzans. You can have a cup of cappuccino while the bombs fall in Yugoslavia. Is that a good idea? Well, stay tuned. 1,000 people in San Francisco are going to think so. We're going to hear from them in the program that follows. So I'm hoping to have a call-in from Patients' Rights Advocate James Kaiser to talk about the new assault on the civil rights of psychiatric survivors. Still tuned to Free Radio 96.3 FM, and if you have a telephone, we hope that we can tune to you by getting you to call in and join this discussion. The phone number at Free Radio Santa Cruz is 427-3772, and we welcome your calls. If you get a busy signal, try again. We only have one line, and we hope it gets used a lot. So 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz, the community radio station that actually lets you say on the air what you're thinking without censorship, without any kind of corporate requirements, as unfortunately becoming increasingly the case with other media. First, a few brief stories before my voice gives out. I'm still surviving a massive cold here, so bear with me. Here's a story from the Toronto Star feature. In Toronto, Canada, April 18th, 400 marched to Queen's Park for homeless. Out of the cold, volunteers challenged governments. It was the middle class who marched 400 strong on behalf of the city's homeless from Nathan Phillips Square to Queen's Park yesterday morning. This was a few mornings ago. For some of them, actually, that was this morning. For some of them, it was the first time they'd ever publicly held up a placard. "I've never been to a march like this," said Lenore Strathy, leader of a 24-member delegation from Humbercrest United Church in the West End. "It's quite a move for us to come on a march and make a sign." Her sign said simply, "A caring community has social housing." Although Strathy's church has been offering an out-of-the-cold lunch program for only a few weeks, she said its members already realize they must make some noise so the provincial government understands there's a real middle-class momentum underway to get government help for the homeless. The out-of-the-cold program is a 12-year-old Band-Aid that's pretty dirty and not sticky anymore. "Everyone in it is experiencing burnout," said Nora McCabe. She is with the Out of the Cold program at the Queen Street Mental Health Facility. "I'm a typical middle-class person who doesn't usually go on marches," said Peter Wyatt of Trinity St. Paul's United Church. In fact, he voted for Mike Harris and the Tories last election because he wanted action on the deficit and the debt. He said, "But not at the expense of the homeless. To give us a tax cut in the face of all these problems is absurd," he said. "Give the savings to the homeless, not to us." Neither Ontario Premier Mike Harris nor Toronto Mayor Mel Lastman took up the offer to speak, but Councillor Jay Layton told the crowd at Nathan Phillips Square the new provincial landlord-tenant laws mean 5,000 people are being evicted in Toronto every month. "In our city, we are throwing people into the streets faster than people like yourselves can bring them in," he said. At Queen's Park, Liberal housing critic Alvin Curling said he is still awaiting action on Ann Golden's report on homelessness. "A lot of names you and I don't recognize and understand, but I think the clear purpose of what they're doing is really obvious." And that's, of course, what we need here in Santa Cruz with the City Council's March 23rd reaffirmation of the sleeping ban and the blanket bans, both of which make it illegal for homeless people to survive outside in a legal fashion. Now, council members will tell you that police are not enforcing these laws very vigorously, that they only do so on complaint, that they only do so in high-profile areas, that between 11 and 8:30 a.m., even though the code of our city specifically says if you sleep, that is a crime punishable by a fine of $54. Repeatedly, one fine after another, if you sleep night after night. That's a pretty expensive amount of money to pay for sleeping outside when there's no legal places to sleep for 500 to 1,500 homeless people. So even though they will tell you that this doesn't happen much, the tickets aren't given much, people live in anxiety, in fear, and also they're very vulnerable. We've had cases of people getting beaten 5 to 15 people beaten in the last 3 months. It's not good. The city council is doing nothing about it. The police department, as far as I know, has not come up with any suspects or even, well, convictions certainly have not happened, and I'm not aware that they have anybody incarcerated for these crimes of beating up homeless people and for sport, troll busting. So we need middle-class people like they're doing in Toronto out on the streets saying, enough of this. Enough of this crazy claim. While we're in back in December, the city council votes that it's a human right to sleep, and then in March they vote it's a crime to sleep. The contradiction could not be sharper. It's amazing. And yet, of course, the police don't look at the human rights declarations. They look at the law. They have to enforce the law. Now, I have got to admit there have not been reported cases of a lot of ticketing happening. In fact, I haven't heard of a ticket since it was March, possibly February. But I have heard of hassles continuing, people being hassled. Although, apparently much less than this time last year. But usually this is sort of the calm before the storm. When the weather heats up, there's a sort of a traditional series of police sweeps that happen in order to make Santa Cruz sort of a homeless cleansing. You know, in Albania and Kosovo and Yugoslavia, it's called ethnic cleansing, but here in Santa Cruz, it's homeless cleansing. Folks can just sort of, you know, sip their coffee at the coffee roasting company and downtown and, you know, notice that there aren't that many homeless people around anymore. And, of course, they can pat themselves on the back for the fact that there's so much has been done for them. But, in fact, what's been done is the police have removed them from sight. And ironically, this produces less focus on the important needs. Well, not ironically, actually, it's actually a designed kind of policy. There's less need to deal with real problems because people are not visible. Whereas when they were visible, such as happened in Miami and Hollywood, Florida, and Fort Lauderdale, Florida, during the 5 years, last 5 years, well, the last 7 years, actually, since federal judge Clyde Atkins' Pottinger decision, that decision ruled you cannot arrest homeless people for sleeping if there are no legal places for them to sleep. People were visible, and because they were visible, massive social services were built. You know, it's interesting that when people see the realities, they have to respond to them. But if you can hide them, if you can drive them out of town, if you can force them to emigrate, if you can deport them, well, then you don't have to deal with it, do you? Phone number here, in case you want to talk about any of these issues, again, is 427-3772. 427-3772. Of course, the major issue that's been on my mind recently has been the bombing, the NATO-U.S. bombing day after day, night after night of Yugoslavia. It's killed a lot of innocent people, and it may have prompted the ethnic cleansing and killings of a lot more innocent people by a nationalist Serbian government in Yugoslavia. And I went up to San Francisco yesterday to join with 1,000 other people to demand that the bombing stop. And apparently every week in San Francisco on Saturday at noon at Powell and Market, which is where the cable car terminates in San Francisco, or one of them, they've been having these protests, these massive protests. They've been small, but they've been getting bigger. And this one had 1,000 people. And I'm going to play you some tapes of the protest, mostly a lot of conversations I had with individuals and some description of the protest by myself. I didn't really track the main speakers, though I'm sure they were worth listening to, and I'm hoping at some point that Free Radio will be able to rebroadcast the teach-in that we had up at UCSC